News Radio. I mega faulted your mother.
You like discussions about incest?
Because first of all, it's the worst movie ever made.
The link ain't blue, so I can't click.
Visit our website at www.geekjuicemedia.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Geek Juice Radio. My name is Charlie, ruggedly, unconventionally handsome cartoonist. With us tonight is the enigmatic and mysterious Kevin Daly.
Howdy.
The abrasive and off-putting Tom Bad Guy.
That would be me.
And the Grinch-like master controller of all that you survey, Alex Jowski.
Howdy.
Today we will begin by discussing Game of Thrones, I believe.
That is correct.
I have never seen this show, so I will be drinking and leaning back in my chair for the next few minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I really don't know. We kind of jokingly talked about the show just being about incest, and I'm like, what kind of geeky topics actually deal very heavily with the topic? And like, Game of Thrones. So I sort of jokingly suggested we talk about Game of Thrones, and I changed my mind and decided it actually is kind of fun to discuss.
Always comes back to incest, doesn't it, Kevin?
So the show about incest. It says it in our intro. I love this series. I actually read the books. Though the trigger for me to read the books back in the day was I saw that the main character, Ned Stark, was going to be Sean Bean. Like, finally, he's a main character. He's finally a character he's not going to die in, like he dies in every other little bit of media he's involved in. Then I read the first book, and spoiler alert, character dies. And I'm like, I understand why they cast him now.
Sean Bean is good at dying.
That's his bread and butter.
It's good, though. He's good at it.
He goes out like a boss every time.
Even in real life, when he got stabbed at that pub, he was just like, drinks for all!
Sean Bean got stabbed in a pub?
Yep.
I was not aware of that. Some drunk Irish guy walks out to him, hey, Goldeneye sucks!
I'll show you how Boromir should have died.
Stabbings?
Silent Hill! Fuck!
Man, I like Silent Hill.
So do I.
And then he died in Equilibrium.
Right. Equilibrium, one of my favorite movies.
That movie with Brittany Murphy and Michael Douglas where Brittany Murphy's just talking crazy-ass gibberish the whole time.
Oh, Don't Say a Word.
Don't Say a Word. Didn't he die in that?
Yes, he did.
I think you can just say Sean Bean was in it. He died. There are a few exceptions, but if you went on the Vegas odds of you just guessing if a movie with Sean Bean has it, he dies, you're probably just going to say yes.
Or Silent Hill, where he's the only character that's not dead.
I'd love to go to Las Vegas Casino and just put, I want to put all my money on the death of a human being.
I think they had that. Didn't they have that bet for Amy Winehouse not that long ago?
They should have if they didn't.
There's a place in Vegas that calculates, it's called like Celebrity Death Pool or something like that.
Don't put in anybody that's over 80.
Or Keith Richards.
Because he's going to live
well,
to be
Well, I mean,
like,
if you put celebrities in that are over 80, it's just like, well, yeah, obviously they're going to die soon. Just math by virtue of mathematics, biology, law of averages.
Yeah, it's like, don't put in people that are in the hospital.
Well, duh.
That's a coward's bet. I'm going to bet on Jack White.
That would actually be a tough bet, because I don't think he does anything too outrageous.
He just gives off a vibe, though, man.
I mean, you don't look at him and go, man, that guy does a lot of cocaine.
The Hugo Award-winning and Emmy Award-winning series, Game of Thrones.
I'm actually a bigger fan of the books. I love the series. And I think they did a really good job of translating the books into what I thought would be a very difficult series to make in terms of, you know, a visual medium. Because the story, the way the books are written, each chapter is from a different character's perspective, and it kind of goes back and forth, so it's a very winding story.
How about for our listeners that maybe have not seen it, why don't you go ahead and give us a quick synopsis?
Kind of difficult to see. Basically, you've got kind of a pseudo War of the Roses era, kind of medieval fantasy sort of thing. Very low magic fantasy that we're talking. There's a couple of supernatural creatures that are introduced, and there are a few more as the book series goes on. Not many in the way of magical weapons. No one really casts spells, and even the ones that kind of do that show up, especially in the second season, of the show, you'll see one. Not, no one's really sure if it's actual magic or not. So there's kind of this layer of low supernatural, low fantasy, a lot of politicking. Powerful noble families as they jockey position of the throne, which is left vacant in the by the end of the first book and season of the show.
Hence Game of Thrones, I imagine.
Yes, in fact, that's the title of the first
book. We call that connecting the dots.
Okay.
The title of the first book is Game of Thrones. The book series is called A Song of Ice and Fire.
Winter is coming.
I remember reading that for the first time, because it was my first year in Colorado, and just, that was echoing throughout my brain the whole time, winter is coming, and winter comes, and it sucks.
I don't see seasons in that show. The seasons, like, for, like, summer and winter, they last, like, really, like, years?
You get, the summers are really short, comparatively. You get these super long, decades to centuries long winters, and when you have these summers that are, like, the one that they're currently in is a very long summer, somewhere in the... To the point where a lot of the kids haven't even seen a winter. And that's actually an insult. It's like, you've never even seen a winter. They always bringing that up. By the end of the fifth book, which I've read, winter is just about here. Yeah. Their falls are brutal, though. We're talking like 40 feet of snow fall. That's fall.
And what's winter?
Hundreds of feet.
So, like, saying that someone's never seen a winter is like calling them green and inexperienced and stuff?
Yeah. Yep. You've never laid with a woman, you know, like that.
You've never... a snowman.
You've never carved a hole in your ice with your wiener before.
You've never written your name in the snow.
All you've made is dirt angels.
The, some of the areas of the world, I guess, don't get hit as hard. The south is not as cold. The north, however, just gets effed.
Yeah.
So my first
which is where Ned Stark and his family are from. Hence their family motto of winter is coming. Kind of a way of life up there.
The ancient land of Miami. So my first ignorant question is, does this take place in medieval times, or is it like a bleak future?
It seems like it's medieval. It's not a post-apocalyptic. It's definitely like I said, I from what I've read, George R.R. Martin, who's the author, who based it heavily on England's War of the Roses. So you have that sort of era. What was the War of the Roses? I can't remember. History major, I can't remember when the War of the Roses is. I believe 1455 to 1485.
That's how far away I am. When you said War of the Roses, the first thing I thought of was the Danny DeVito movie.
The world feels more pre-Renaissance. You have the Summer Isles and like the Middle Eastern sort of people, the Mediterranean kind of cultures are from. They have sort of they have these water dancers that are basically like fencers that use rapiers and stuff. So it's kind of, I guess it would be a transitionary into Renaissance era world.
Incest.
Yeah, go ahead and go to the incest. Dark. The characters that do that.
Oh, the twins?
Yeah.
Cersei and Jaime Lannister.
So it's twincest.
It is twincest. And it's a bizarre relationship because at least for the first couple of books, they're probably the most normal, healthy, loving couple. And that's, if you know anything about the series, it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I had a twin, I'd probably and it'd be gorgeous.
But one thing I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, because there's these two characters in it, which is a brother and a sister. And if I remember, they come from a proud, like, I think it was like a dragon lineage. I believe, if I remember correctly, like, their people were kind of erased, and then they were, like, because there was, like, a war, their entire people was erased, and they were the only two that could be saved. And they're off on a different land trying to recruit an army. And in order to do it, the sister has to wed into, like, kind of like a barbarian tribe with a lot of people. The best thing about that is the brother, and they're the Targaryens. I said that correct, right?
Yeah, the Targaryens.
My favorite character was the brother, only because he was the snobbiest, biggest, like, a-hole in the entire thing. Imagine Draco Malfoy without magic. That's who this character was. And he's supposed to be annoying, and he's supposed to just piss you off and be a snob. But for some reason, I liked him so much because you love to hate him. And they're going around, and he's just ordering all these guys who are, like, a billion times bigger than him, saying, I'm going to be king one day, so you better do my bidding. But he's, like, such a good character. You love to hate him. You love to get annoyed by him. And then, here's a spoiler alert, though. He gets his comeuppance, and he dies in the most unique way. He gets held down, and they just pour a, like, cast iron pot of gold on his head.
Well, Well, Tom, I think that's true for all TV, though, is the bastard characters always get the best dialogue.
It was a really good, and I was actually sad when he died, because I was like, just, he's, like, such a big wimp, but, you, like I said, you just love to hate him, and then they kill him, like, well, now who the hell am I supposed to hate? Like, it's really weird, but I really recommend watching the series. I haven't read the books, because if it's not a comic book, I pretend it doesn't exist.
You don't read books.
Yeah, I did enjoy the TV series, though. It was really good.
That character is interesting. It's not... those characters in particular, Targaryens, in the book, I don't really feel like either of them is well fleshed out, at least from a sympathetic standpoint. Daenerys gets a lot more time. She's one of the most important characters in the series. She gets a lot of page time, and she develops a very interesting way, I think. But neither character, a couple of points about the TV show versus the book. I really found myself liking Daenerys a lot more in the TV series. I thought she was a more sympathetic character. I really felt like I understand her motivations better from the series. And Cersei Lannister is much more humanized and less villainized in the TV series than the book. The book, she's pretty vile. I mean, you get a little bit of sympathy for her as the books go on, but not nearly the point where you kind of understand exactly where she's coming from in the TV series and why she is the way she is, how she was raised, the loveless marriage she was in, because her husband always loved this other chick and never loved her, even though they forced married because of a political union. You really felt... Sorry, I actually really liked that character in the series. I was shocked.
Another my favorite location in the entire show was the Wall. And basically, part in the north, there's a huge mountain range, and inside they constructed a fortress. And apparently there's supposed to be, like, some sort of, I mean, I don't even know what they specifically say it, but it's rumored to be, like, you know, like, monsters and mayhem on the north side of the wall. And basically they have a military force guarding it, but it's one of those things, like, once you choose to go to the wall, you can't leave. So you have to stay there for the rest of your life guarding because, you know, winter is coming and everybody thinks the monsters are coming from there. But it's really, I just really like that location. It's just secluded, and plus, it wants you to know what the hell is over there. Especially, like, the parts in the show where they tread through there, and I don't want to give away too much, but, like, it's really good. I really liked all the shots done there, and all the episodes kind of focusing on that, just because it's really unique, and it's just the location and the atmosphere of it. I mean, it's like all snowy and bleak, and these guys basically have to band as brothers and live together for the rest of their lives, just in case something from the north comes. Plus, just the name, like, must go to the wall. It carries a lot of weight.
So it's like Shangri-La, only instead of paradise, it's a bitterly cold, horrible hellscape.
But they have to suffer through it for a good cause.
And most of them are rapists, thieves, and murderers that get sent
to Like, they take, like, volunteers, but, like, instead of, like, putting people in jail, they're just like, okay, you have to work at the wall for the rest of your life.
The wall is also a, like, 1,000-foot-tall wall of ice. I mean,
oh, yeah, it's massive. It's this huge thing. And the visual effects in the show, which are really, really good as well. The wall looks pretty cool. And also, like, the big capital city, I thought looked awesome. Because it looks just like a paradise. And who is the actor in there? I can't remember what character he plays, but he looks like Gary Oldman.
Littlefinger.
Yeah, Littlefinger. Let me find that actor's name. I swear to God, this dude just looks like Gary Oldman, and I was always confused. Go on, I'll find it and then, like, send the link, but you'll be, like, amazed.
I already got it. Already found it.
Just, like, when I saw him, I was like, he looks like Gary Oldman, but it's not Gary Oldman. And to be quite honest, he looks like Gary Oldman from, like, Fifth Element. Like, just the face and, like, the facial, like, it just looks like...
Well, and it's a Gary Oldman role, that kind of duplicitous, strange, political maneuvering. And that character is also important, and he plays the game very well, that character.
He's like a politician, but he's also, like, a pimp at a whorehouse, like...
Yeah, he runs the brothel.
He was in Shanghai Nights.
Get out of here.
Yeah, he was the bad Britain guy that was trying to get to the throne.
I think what I like best about the series, the books, and the show itself is the fact that none of the characters, with maybe the exception of Ned Stark, is all that heroic. They've all incredibly flawed. They're all got negative personalities. A lot of them have really positive traits as well. They're very well-rounded characters that are extremely believable.
Were you thankful for the series since now you know how to pronounce some of these names?
Yes. Some of them are very difficult to pronounce. I found that I got most of them very close when I was reading.
since it's listing the casting for season two, and there's this character here, Zaro Zohan Yaxos.
Yeah, a lot of X's. That's one of the Summer Islanders, I believe.
That's one reason why I'd like to watch the movie of the girl with the dragon tattoo, because I just got through reading the book, and it's like, Elizabeth walked up, Sparagagargan. Like, God damn it, I just gave up on trying to pronounce any of that.
Mr. S, is that, just leave it at that?
Yeah.
Swedish, a little bit too much there for you, Charlie?
I think it is. I would not last 5 minutes up there.
It was weird, because watching the Swedish version of that film, I actually found that the language is not that far off from English, and I was actually picking up on what they were saying a lot better than in most foreign language films that I've watched.
By the way, this Aidan Gillen guy, he's a CIA agent in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, I saw that. That's cool. He's in a movie with Gary Oldman. That's awesome.
If I see him next to Gary Oldman, I will.
Yeah. That's me.
My favorite character in the book and in the TV series, though, is Tyrion Lannister, the dwarf played by Peter Dinklage in the series.
That guy is good.
And an awesome actor. That character is so funny. And that character has a very interesting development arc, too, as the series goes on.
He's an elf.
Call me an elf one more time. That's Peter Dinklage.
Yeah. You ever see Living in Oblivion?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's Peter Dinklage. That's the first thing I ever saw him in. Yeah, he's hilarious.
He's in Death at a Funeral.
He was in the British version, too. He plays the same character in the remake.
Yeah, he does get, like, the actor.
Like, Tyrion Lannister in that, the character he plays, is... Well, he wants his father's approval, but he goes against them just because of how he is, and... But, like, I like the discussions he has with Sean Bean character's son in that when they're at the wall, and, like, you kind of see him as, like, a drunkard playboy, but then, like, I mean, he, like, really gets it, and it's good acting by that guy.
For that, he was a stunt double on Oz.
I think I saw one episode of Oz and went, this is disturbing, and stopped watching.
Dude, isn't B.D. Wong in Oz?
Yes, B.D. Yeah. Wong is in Oz.
J.K. Simmons.
B.D. Wong, I'm just gonna say this right now, off topic, B.D. Wong is the shit, and he is awesome.
He's in Oz?
Yeah, J.K. Simmons was just, like, horrible, like, brutal white supremacist in Oz.
I love Oz. You had
J.K. Simmons?
Yeah.
Really?
Wait.
Okay, let me tell you this. What? I was watching...
Cave Johnson from Portal 2 was a white supremacist in Oz?
I was watching...
Life gives you lemons.
I was watching this panel discussion from Comic-Con a few years back with a bunch of voiceover actors. It was on the DVD of Comic Book, the movie. And Billy West starts talking about Oz. He says he was, like, out on the road doing something, and his wife was taping it for him when he got home. And when he got home, he's watching it. His wife was like, you gotta see this guy on this show, Oz. They must have found, like, a real convict to play this. This guy, look at his eyes. He's got dead eyes. He's insane. And then Billy West is watching. He goes, oh, I know that guy. He's the yellow M&M.
He is the yellow.
But speaking of...
All I can think of is, when life gives you lemons, rape a dude in the shower.
But speaking of B.D. Wong in Oz, Christopher Maloney, also from SVU, is in Oz.
Yep.
Oh, damn. Well, I remember, because I'm a true B.D. Wong fan, I remember him in Jurassic Park, and he was actually one of the military guys in Executive Decision.
He was in, who was he in Jurassic Park?
He was the doctor talking about the cloning stuff.
Oh, the only Asian you'll see in any.
Yeah, he was like part of the tour or something in Jurassic Park. And here's the Asian.
Ernie Hudson was in Oz?
Ernie Hudson.
Wow.
Was he the psychologist or something?
I don't think he's busting ghosts in that one.
He might have been the warden.
And apparently B.D. Wong is gay.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
I knew his character on SVU was gay. Did not know he himself was gay.
B.D. Wong is a shit. Don't you ever f***ing forget it.
But I gotta look
at this point forward, I will not.
I'm looking up his filmography, so I don't even know who this gentleman is.
He was in The Salt and Sea.
That movie's
Shang
awesome.
And Mulan, I think that's the only one of the movies that I've seen that is on this list.
He did a voice on that.
Jurassic Park, I don't remember that character.
He was the voice of a cockroach in Joe's apartment. Good for you, buddy.
I think I missed that.
In Jurassic Park, they're taking the tour and they get out of the chairs and they go in. He's the doctor that he's advising when the raptor gets born. He's the one that like talks about the cloning and everything and how the sex of the dinosaurs is predetermined and stuff like that. Ooh, you should probably watch it again. It's a good movie.
I actually have Jurassic Park 3 in my tape player right now. Yes, I still watch it. All hipster style.
I just realized I said Jurassic Park's a good movie as if nobody's ever seen it before.
It's by what's-his-name, Spielberg, or whatever his name is.
I
Yeah, Louise.
He did something with a list in black and white. I don't know what it was, but
some prestigious crap, I'm sure.
Yeah. Really, he won a gold ball. But yeah, Game of Thrones, awesome. I totally recommend it.
I think I might start watching it now.
Jowski needs to watch it. I've been telling him he needs to watch it for about a year now. Second season starting soon, I believe, March. April, I believe.
I should have HBO for another few months.
Once again, recommending it. Go Game of Thrones.
And if you do read books, pick them up. They're very long. I think the third one or the fourth one is like 1,200 pages.
Before we get on to the next topic, Who Framed Roger Rabbit 2 is in development.
Was Why? Or is?
Is.
Is.
According to IMDb, it is.
Huh.
As is Jurassic Park 4.
I'd heard about Jurassic Park 4. I am fairly excited about it. Because the third one was terrible, but in a B-movie sort of way. So either if it's good or B-movie terrible, I will enjoy it.
As well as Real Steel 2.
Hey, Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum, that's all I need. I'm sold. That's it. That's all I need. I am sold on this.
So you're just going to completely gloss over Richard Attenborough then?
You're damn right.
Is Attenborough still alive?
I believe he is. I didn't hear about him dying.
Well, let's find out.
Well, then again, I was shocked that Dolly Parton was still alive, so you never know.
Oh, dude, we definitely would have heard about him dying. Or her, rather.
Well, with the surgery, you can't
it's
tell,
all
right?
It's all plastic. It doesn't really...
Yeah, sure, yeah Attenborough's still alive.
Still alive?
She's not what you call a
88
real...
88 years old.
Not Oliver is 80, though.
Last thing that he did was a... short about Welcome to World War One, probably because he was alive for it.
23, not quite.
My 43rd birthday was interrupted by a bombing, right?
Alright, so moving into the next topic, dystopia. I want to discuss any dystopian movies, books, comics. The reason I've been thinking dystopia lately is I just finished reading The Hunger Games, since there's that movie coming out for it in March. And yeah, it's a YA novel. But it's better than Twilight.
Now, when you say YA, you mean like...
My daily bowel movement is better than Twilight, so I'm going to have to sell it a little better than that.
I think me watching you doing your daily bowel movement would be more entertaining than Twilight.
Oh, he does have some sweet bowel movements.
Your bowel movements are real popcorn bowel movement. Like, you just want to eat popcorn and just get into it.
Or eat the popcorn in the bowel movement, yeah.
But dystopia is one of my favorite genres. Like 1984, Blade Runner, Brazil, one of the best movies. Children of Men is dystopian.
I liked Children of Men. I thought it was excellent.
I love Brazil. That's still in my top 10 of all time.
Why don't you go ahead and just define dystopia for us?
I'll just give the wiki definition.
Which could be anything.
Yeah.
It's the idea of a society in a repressive and controlled state, often under the guise of being utopian, has characterized in books like Brave New World, and 1984. Dystopian societies feature different kinds of repressive social control systems, various forms of active and passive coercion.
In layman's terms, it's a near future that went awry.
Police states.
Yes.
V for Vendetta.
Ew, the movie sucked.
It really did. I like the idea of it better. I think it could have been great if the transgendered nutcase who did The Matrix did not direct it.
Yeah.
Like based on an Alan Moore graphic novel.
Oh, it also lists Logan's Run as being a dystopia.
I'd buy that.
I guess, except you never see anything other than everyone has to die at whatever, 30, I think it was?
I think it was 25.
It was 21st in the book, 30 in the film.
I didn't read the book, I just seen the movie. My parents always loved Logan's Run, made me watch it, and I've kind of developed a taste for it. It is, I think it's an acquired taste as a movie, Logan's Run, because it's kind of weird.
I think I've seen it. Is it kind of campy?
A little bit.
It defines campy.
Like, is it Batman Adam West campy?
Protein,
or
plankton, fruit from the sea.
At the time, it was the sh**, but it did not age well.
No. Well, watch it, because conceptually, and you'll see a lot of other movies ripping it off quite frequently. Yeah.
Well, I watched it when I was, like, 12, and the only reason I watched it is because the TV guide told me there'd be nudity.
And there is.
There is.
I remember that. You'd be, like, 13.
And the big old N.
Yep.
The lady that's in the movie, I can't remember the actress's name, is attractive. So there's, I mean, you know, good. It's brief, but it's quality.
It's a good primer for when you're at that age, I guess.
Yeah, if you're 12, you know, and you're looking for...
I got to the point, I'm like, you know, this is a pretty good movie. I don't care to see any of these people naked, but I'll stick with this movie.
Well, you guys will be happy to know that there's a Logan's Run in development for 2014.
Stop this from happening.
Yeah.
With Ryan Gosling starring, of course.
Hey, that might not be too bad.
I think Ryan Gosling has like something terminal where he's trying to get as much movies under his belt while he can.
Yeah.
I guess if I had to pick one guy to play that kind of that character, Logan. Logan's Run, I guess Ryan Gosling wouldn't be a bad choice.
I would go balls out and just make it Bruce Campbell. Just totally.
Well, I would put Bruce Campbell in anything, to be honest. Yeah.
I imagine Ryan Gosling is still doing whatever he can to distance himself from having ever done The Notebook.
And rightfully so.
So, the actress who plays Jessica in Logan's Run, though. Is Jenny Agutter, and I don't think I've seen anything else with her in it. Oh, she was in American Werewolf in London, but I didn't see that.
You didn't see that?
I did not.
It's a classic, sir.
That is.
I know, but it's not really my thing.
How is that movie a classic?
John Landis directing?
That had the best transformation scene of its day, man. F*** The Howling. And Griffin Dunne was brilliant in that movie.
Scene and
random.
He wakes up naked at the zoo and he's trying to get back to his hotel and he takes a kid's balloon to cover his junk.
Yeah, that just sounds great. Let me tell you.
All of that
there with Kathy Bates' ass.
This had been classic. But if you had to pick a favorite dystopian movie, what would it be?
Oh, if I had to pick a favorite.
I'm going to go with the Escape from New York and Escape from L.A.
Yeah. I'd love Escape from L.A. Okay, I know it's campy and bad, but I do love Escape from L.A.
That's going to get me into a whole different thing, because every time I say anything about Escape from L.A., a bunch of friends of mine pop up and start saying how much worse it is compared to Escape from New York, but I prefer Escape from L.A.
But I'm not the only one. All right.
First of all, both of you, Escape from New York was way better.
Escape from New York was good. Escape from L.A., it just had so much more for the right audience. And
also, Bruce Campbell.
I know, it had Bruce Campbell.
Argument is over. It's got Bruce Campbell in it.
I still like the first one, but I'm not saying I don't like the second one. I like the second one, but my preference is the first one. But it's only because of, like, you take Kurt Russell's character in that, and I'm totally going to go into video games right now. You take his character, and Hideo Kojima, who does the Metal Gear games, is where he got the inspiration for Solid Snake, was from Snake in that movie. The basically kind of the attire, you know, like the rough voice and everything like that. That's because it ties into that, I really, really like it. Because Metal Gear Solid is awesome. I just like the first one. It's really
the first one is probably objectively a better movie, but the second one, I liked Escape from L.A. I thought it was way more fun.
Here's one thing, because I talked to you about it.
They surfed down Wilshire.
It had a Republican president putting his own daughter to death.
The ending is my favorite, probably my favorite ending of any movie ever.
Yeah, like, that's one thing I want to talk about is, so Snake shuts down the world, and everybody's, you know, you're kind of left in awe, like, holy crap, he did that. The one thing I always think about is, how many people did he just kill? Like, imagine all the airplanes flying around that just fell into the sea or into land because of that.
They had it coming, Tom.
I just assume they were guilty of something.
As far as favorite dystopian films, probably Soylent Green, one of my favorites. And there's Idiocracy.
See, Idiocracy would be my
Santana's.
And if The Hunger Games would be rated R, it'd be up there.
But it won't be.
It won't be.
No, Idiocracy
is great.
Yeah.
That would be my favorite. I mean, because Mike Judge, when you think about him, Beavis and Butthead, it was like a Trojan horse plea for people to be smarter and stop being such morons.
And then Idiocracy turned into just a downright demand.
Yeah.
You people need to stop being idiots.
You like sex and money too? Wow, we should hang out.
I know, I'm not a huge fan of Dax Shepard, but he was brilliant in that movie.
I
he kind of always plays that character, though. But, I mean, it works well for that movie, but...
I was going to say that, but I was going to say Luke Wilson instead. Not a big Luke Wilson fan.
So, this list of dystopian films here, it'll put The Island, but it won't list Parts the Clonus Horror.
That's because we're all trying to forget Parts the Clonus Horror.
But Parts the Clonus
At least The Island had Scarlett Johansson in it.
I'll give you that.
Parts the Clonus Horror was not directed by Michael Bay.
Are you gonna sit there and really tell me that Parts is a better movie than The Island?
Yes. Parts the Clonus Horror is better than The Island.
But if I had to go...
Like I said, at least I can stare at Scarlett Johansson for an hour and a half watching The Island. Parts is just terrible.
Parts is fun.
I've never seen either of those.
So much.
It lists Southland Tales, which was my favorite movie of 2007.
Southland Tales had Kevin Smith in it, didn't it?
Yes, it did. He was the guy on board the Mega Zeppelin.
I have not seen the movie, but I don't know what I think I've heard pretty mixed things about it. Some people really like it. Obviously,
one of my favorite conversations that I've ever had was when I was trying to describe Southland Tales to my brother-in-law. I said, okay, imagine this scene. They're two guys are trying to simulate the killing of unarmed bystanders to try to frame a cop. Now, in the middle of that, an actual cop comes in who is so jaded and burnt out that he actually kills these people, feels no remorse, and walks away. And my brother-in-law is like, all right. And I said, but the psycho cop is played by John Lovitz. And there are no words to describe the light in his face when I said John Lovitz. He's like, I have to see this movie. It made me, I wouldn't say made me a fan, but it made me tolerate three people that I really did not like. The Rock, who I could not stand before that movie. Sarah Michelle Gellar, who I still pretty much cannot stand, but I will admit that she was good in that. And Justin Timberlake, just for that scene where he's in the arcade, walking around lip-syncing to that killer song.
You know, I think that movie's on Netflix. I'll check it out now.
Is Netflix?
That's, Richard Kelly, right? Donnie Darko director?
It is Richard Kelly.
Oh, he's...
I bet you it's odd.
It's very odd, and you cannot absorb everything in one screen.
Is it better than The Box?
It's so much better than The Box. And I mean that both talking about the movie The Box and the slang term for vagina.
This movie is better than vagina.
Maybe not better, but it's... That and vagina would be the best weekend ever.
You'd respect it.
So
I will say this about The Rock. You put him in the right role, he is very entertaining. He was the only redeemable quality of Be Cool.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not enough of a redeeming quality, though.
That movie is such a letdown.
This also lists dystopian music, which includes the entire music library of Roger Waters, and Kilroy Was Here by Styx.
Queensryche is on that list. That makes sense.
So is Alan Parsons Project.
Which I believe was a hovercraft of some sort. Okay, wait a minute. The Unforgiven by Metallica is dystopian music. I don't...
Have you ever seen the music video?
Yeah, but still.
It kind of is. Kind
of. All I got from the music video was that there was a dude in a hole.
There you go. Enough said.
The Gen Vision shows there was Aeon Flux. Avatar, The Last Airbender?
Yeah.
No. Captain Planet.
Captain Planet is a dystopian television?
Alex and I were discussing this earlier. Was it today or was it yesterday? I can't remember. But we were discussing this. I said that you don't really see enough of what goes on behind the scenes in Captain Planet to have any sort of sense of what the world is like as a whole. All you see are these individualized scenarios where you have these corporations trying to pollute stuff, and then the Planeteers show up, fail miserably, and have to summon Captain Planet. But there's no real indication that these corporations are so powerful that they run everything, that everything is being polluted at all times. That was my argument.
And they spread the government propaganda that Captain Planet, he's our hero. He's going to bring pollution down to zero.
So are we supposed to be under any impression that this is a near future that could happen where kids get rings and form a blue man to fight pollution? That's the idea?
That's the idea.
Well,
that's
bullshit.
But Captain Planet is the dystopian future envisioned by George Orwell.
It's a direct sequel.
That's like saying Fight Club is a sequel to Calvin and Hobbes.
It's the best sequel ever.
I could actually see that, though.
Dude, yeah, like Hobbes is Tyler Durden. That'd be
bad.
Because like when the narrator gets to that age, he's no longer impressed by a tiger.
Yeah,
and
so he's a man.
He makes up tiger. Tyler Durden.
So am I?
You've just completely changed my viewing of Fight Club from now on. I'm just gonna be watching it as a Calvin and Hobbes.
And I could see Calvin growing up and mindlessly working some dead-end white-collar job.
Because the system beat him.
Am I to understand that Calvin's dad was the f***er setting up franchises?
Yes.
He was never really happy, you gotta admit. He was just one comment away from running and never looking back.
Get Calvin and Hobbes. You always had all the comics with Calvin and his wagon. Took that wagon and now he fills it up with fat to make soap.
That's true.
Okay, this website needs to score an interview with Chuck Palahniuk to test this theory. We need to find out. This is making a lot of sense now.
Yeah, it is. No, like seriously, perfect, it's starting to be eerie.
I mean, okay, Chuck Palahniuk kind of specializes in dystopia when you think about it. Because have any of you read Rant?
Yeah, I have. That's my favorite Palahniuk book.
That's a good one. That's a very dystopian future. Kevin and Tom, have you guys ever read that?
No, I've never read any of his books.
You're asking me if I've read a book,
And Tom doesn't read books, so...
That was not illustrated by Frank Miller.
But the thing with Rant is, at the dystopian future, it goes to how this became, trying to stop traffic jams.
Yeah, that was the linchpin of society being divided up between people that are allowed out during the day and people that can only come out at night. And the people that come out at night, because there's no, like, business traffic, every night is a demolition derby. It is such an awesome book. You guys should check that out.
Read that book maybe 3 times now.
Yeah.
And then it gets into time travel, and it's definitely check that book out.
I'm trying to think of other dystopian books I've read. I read Brave New World, which I was quite fond of. Fahrenheit 451 and Lord of the Flies, which I hated.
Oh, good.
I don't know if I'd include Lord of the Flies in dystopia. Well, maybe it's like a microcosm of dystopia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a dystopia in the sense of that one isolated island. And because Dowski is talking about the Hunger Games, and you mentioned you did a review for Battle Royale, which a lot of people compare it to. And I always look at both of those and look at, basically, this is all kind of Lord of the Flies influence. You put a bunch of kids in an island somewhere and they kill each other off. I read Lord of the Flies and I go, I don't buy that these kids would degenerate into barbarism so quickly. I know that the book was written as a reaction to the wars that had gone on in the prior decades, World War I and World War II, and a kind of an analysis of the human condition, but I do not believe that the psychology is correct there. I don't think kids would just automatically, just because they're in the absence of adults and absence of order, that they'll just start killing each other for no reason.
Okay, as the parents in this group, I think we have to disagree. If kids are left to their own devices, they completely lose their
I wasn't like that as a kid. I'm not that old that I don't remember what it was like being a kid.
Seeing it firsthand now with my daughter, it's 100% true.
So you have a psychopath for a daughter? Is that what you're getting at, Charlie?
Well, I've managed to keep it within the boundaries of society, but if my daughter was in an accident and stranded on a desert island, she would resort to barbarism, like, the first afternoon.
Like, all right, Alex,
as soon
you're
as the last
parent.
Adult died, she would bitch slap Piggy, take the conch, and go from there.
All right, Alex, you're a parent. What about your daughter?
My daughter would be like, I don't care as long as I get fed. That would be her thing.
Wait till she gets older, Alex.
But she hates being alone, so... And
I do believe that you would form clicky-based societies.
Yeah, my daughter...
Because people by nature are tribal,
well,
and will form
to that.
Groups like that. I do believe that happens.
You add to that fear of the possibility of never being rescued. I mean, everything...
And there's no SpongeBob on a desert island.
Exactly. The thought of losing SpongeBob and losing everything that you were familiar with, that would drive a kid nuts.
But would the first reaction be, let's slaughter the nearest person?
That's my issue
with Lord of the Flies. I don't think that's the first reaction, but that seems to be the first reaction all these kids have.
I think the first reaction was...
sort of blood orgy with the pig. All this stuff, I just don't believe that that's the nature of human condition. I don't want to believe.
I know, when I first read Lord of the Rings and Piggy opens his mouth about his glasses, I'm like, they need to kill and eat this kid now.
Lord of the Rings?
No, Lord of the Flies! I know.
I remember
Lord of the Rings.
That Hobbit had to eat that live pig. That was horrible.
That's a potential crossover that we should do.
I want to backtrack for a bit back to Calvin and Hobbes and Fight Club. Remember the little girl in Calvin and Hobbes?
Susie.
Susie Dark.
Yeah.
Remember how Calvin hated her, but Hobbes loved her?
Oh my God.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Kind of like that girl in Fight Club.
Marla.
Dear God.
Helda Bonham Carter.
That's
dude. If you can. Somehow think of how Spaceman Smith fits in that, then you have me sold.
Calvin and Hobbes had a secret club
called Gross, Get Rid of Slimy Girls.
And girls were not allowed.
You're in my house. What are you doing in my house?
And as far as Calvin's father being part of that corporate mess, Calvin's father was a patent attorney.
See?
He actually had a job title?
Yeah. His mother is a stay-at-home mom.
And his
I knew that.
Contributed to corporate America.
His dad helped build corporate America.
See? This makes perfect sense now.
Now, how do you tie in Rosalind the babysitter?
Rosalind shaped Calvin's view of women.
Dude, and Rosalind could probably connect to that. You know, remember Chloe, the lady with cancer?
Yes.
I'm just making it up, but that's going to connect because I said so.
I'll buy that.
She has, what is it? She has porn magazines, lubricants, anal nitrate.
Nitrates.
Yeah.
Looks like Meryl Streep's skeleton dipped in yellow wax.
Yeah. And Once again, they like to go sledding in the snow. Slide. Bam, right there.
Slide. His happy place was an ice cave with a penguin.
Indeed.
Yes.
I suppose now's time for full confession. I never read a whole lot of Calvin and Hobbes, so.
Well, now you got to.
Okay. And I'm guessing Mo, later in life,
the bully.
He devoted his life to working out, and he developed bitch tits at some point.
Maybe, yeah.
Changed his name to Bob, out of shame.
And you know what's weird? You remember Tyler Durden's boss in that movie? Doesn't he look doesn't he look like Calvin's dad? So maybe there's like some anger toward that?
He looks a lot like Calvin's dad, and he makes faces very similar to Miss Wormwood.
Just like the haircut.
Yeah.
And do you ever notice a lot of Calvin's fantasies? He's big and tall and destroying all the buildings.
Well, except for Spaceman Spiff. We gotta find a connection there.
Yeah, what would be okay. Spaceman Spiff's connection?
Space.
I'm trying to think.
Space monkeys.
Well, he does have a job where he's flying in airplanes a lot, but I don't know if you could. I'm just trying to think of something like. I don't know if you could do that.
Calvin's fantasy character, Spaceman Spiff, all the aliens and stuff he fought were his parents or his teachers.
Yeah. So he imagined them as other people. Oh my god.
Spaceman Spiff was him as a child would, destroying corporate America.
That's like him adopting an alter ego.
Yes, with Hobbs and Spaceman Spiff, it was easier for him to develop the alter
ego
like, Tyler Durden.
He just imagined people to fight, so it'd be like a child imagination of Fight Club. Is everybody's monsters and you have to fight them.
One of us has to contact Chuck Palahniuk, because I refuse to believe that we're the only ones who have come up with this connection.
Yeah.
Parodies of lemonade stands where he would sell things like suicide drinks.
Yeah.
That's very cultish behavior.
Very cultish.
Where he'd make him produce, he'd make him produce it, selling ladies their fat asses back to them.
Or check out Calvin's anarchic theme song for his Calvin Ball. Other kids' games are all such a bore. They've got to have rules and they got to keep score. You know, we're
Calvin Ball's awesome though. Did you ever actually play Calvin Ball? Just play a game and just make up rules as you go?
I tried. One game lasted 5.5 hours.
I'm way too order-minded to do that. I have to have things laid out before I start them.
I think Calvin Ball should be the next MMO. That's what
Calvin
I think.
Calvin Ball is a game that was created as a rebellion against organized team sports, just like Fight Club.
Just like a Fight Club. Yep. This is. I think we gotta like when we're done here. I'm writing this down.
And his snow sculptures. Remember those?
Jowski, do a Google search. I'm convinced someone else has come up with this.
Yeah, I'll look that up.
This is too perfect. Calvin and Hobbes Fight Club, yeah.
Calvin and Hobbes Fight Club theory.
I got one. It shows a picture of Calvin and then Tyler Durden. I am Jack's younger self.
The Hobbes-Tyler connection. They misspelled Hobbes.
Tiger Durden.
I no longer have faith in this article because they misspelled Hobbes and they used pink text.
Yeah, they've basically come up with all the concepts that you guys have.
Oh my god, read the comic down there where Hobbes is standing there saying, it kind of makes you wonder why man considers himself such a big screaming deal.
Followed by, you are not a beautiful and unique snowflake. Yeah.
See, great minds think alike.
Yeah, Marla and Susie, yeah, we totally got that down.
The grown-up versions of Calvin, Hobbes, and Susie start their old relationships.
And they have the Mo and Bob connection, just like you had, Charlie.
Do they really?
They do.
Holy
yeah.
They do.
And Gross is a precursor of Fight Club.
Yep.
Both have catchy names. Both are co-run by Friendless Male and his imaginary companion.
The Rotting Wooden Clubhouse.
Both are exclusively male organizations. The leaders of both organizations constantly engage in fisticuffs. And there is only one fight at a time.
And in Fight Club, it was Tyler that brought Marla into the house without consulting with Jack.
Oh my god, this person even says Chloe is actually Calvin's old babysitter, Rosalind.
Oh, wow.
This is freaky. So who made this?
Did you guys read this before? And
no, I swear to God, no. We totally did this, I've never, ever thought about this before.
There's a picture of Calvin
playing a joke at old Kevin.
Calvin displaying an early distaste for institution. He's screaming, what on earth am I doing in here on this beautiful day? This is the only life I've got. I am Jack's lost youth.
Yeah, this is great. Although, oh, man.
Don't appear to have made the Spaceman Spiff connection.
Yes, we are still on top of that.
And there's, what was his superhero's name?
Stupendous Man.
Stupendous Man, yeah. Oh, this is weird.
Yeah, that's spooky.
This is too short of an article with no bullet points. My bullet points.
Pink paragraph centered.
That should be our blog setup going forward. Pink paragraph centered.
And Times New Roman.
And this article
always Comic Sans it.
Well, and anybody listening, you can find this. Just go to Google. Just type in a connection between Calvin Hobbes and Fight Club. The guy who actually did this article, his name is Galvin P. Chow. I don't know who it is, but I thought I'd give him totally some shout out for this.
Yes, give that man props. Yes, you have the Geek Juice seal of approval now, Mr. Chow.
Indeed, I would gladly take him on as a writer. That is good.
There are 8 rules of Fight Club, and Hobbes has 8 fingers.
Might be pushing it a little bit there.
There's a bunch of them for people to... Oh, man, that's crazy.
I think it just proves that some people have too much time on their hands.
Well, we, stumbled upon it. We were just thinking about it, and it just came out. But now that I look, especially since a lot of people... I think everybody's onto something.
Yes, this is black text on a white background, and it's in Arial font. Oh, this one has discussion questions for, if you brought this to your book club.
Let's go find a book club and say, never mind what you're talking about. Oprah can wait. We're going to talk about... Yeah.
Fight Club, Calvin and Hobbes. Think about it.
Never mind the corrections. We're going to talk about this now.
All right. In this film, Calvin and Hobbes actually reversed many personality traits as Jack and Tyler. Is it possible that Calvin is the personality that got repressed and Hobbes is the one that did the growing up? Discuss.
Okay. At some point when Calvin was, maybe a teenager, Hobbes just kind of took over.
Yes.
But Calvin lied dormant in his own subconscious. Oh, wow.
I'm actually at chuckpolonick.net, and they actually have a thread open in their forums talking about it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Tyler wears a fur coat near the end of the movie. What is the significance of this garment, given his past incarnation as a jungle animal?
Uh-huh.
Dude, I totally thought we were on to, the greatest idea
There's
ever.
There's more here. This goes beyond Fight Club, because this question is, if Calvin really wanted to change things, why didn't he just dust off his old cardboard box time machine and hop in? That is exactly Rant.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's about going back in time to change stuff.
Yeah, that is pretty damn close.
The transition from gleeful Calvin to dull Jack is not uncommon. Little Nemo became a banker. Peter Pan became a lawyer, and Garfield was caught and butchered by the chef of a Chinese restaurant.
It would have been funnier if it was an Italian restaurant and he was made into lasagna.
One exception is Charlie Brown, who, from all indications, was mentally middle-aged at the time of his birth.
While Calvin's world in the comic strip is pure romanticized idealism, whereas in Fight Club he lives in gray, bleak reality. In the safety of the panel, Calvin is perpetually 6 years old. Terrible things can never happen versus the real world.
Where terrible things happen all the damn time.
Which makes Fight Club all the bleaker because it depicts what happens when you take someone weaned on dreams and limitless possibilities and jam him into a cramped cage confined by rules and regulations. It probably only took poor Calvin a few years in the adult world to fully make the sad change.
Oh, man. Okay. I think Geek Juice salutes Gavin P. Chow for having the greatest idea in the history of anything.
And, I thought we were, on the cusp of something. But it's actually awesome, and it's cool that other people, just caught that, too.
That's like discovering penicillin by accident.
Yeah.
We left a sandwich out in a rainstorm.
Or the cake out in the rain.
MacArthur Park.
I made a MacArthur Park reference. Thank you for somebody for getting it.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that greatly.
Given my years of karaoke experience, I will catch
you. Someone actually does MacArthur Park in karaoke. Isn't that a 20-minute song?
No, the karaoke songs are butchered, so that it would be 3 minutes long. And then the person would sing it and then not know that, and then just stumble over the words.
Oh, dude, you're preaching to the choir, man. Because I read all the lyrics so that I don't have to listen to the singing. I'm trying to tune it out. It's like Taoist theory, trying to ohm it away.
Good news. MacArthur Park is only 7.5 minutes long. It just feels like it's 20.
I'll give you this. No one else will sing The End by The Doors at 8:30 p.m. I'm standing there. Tom is singing The Doors. I'm you're going to open with that?
You have Smith stuff in your karaoke?
I'm sure there is, at least Morrissey.
That's
it sounded damn good, right?
It did, and you gave me a lot of room to play with the reverb. I remember that. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Galvin P. Chow's seminal article on the Calvin and Hobbes Fight Club theory.
Seminal? That seems like it ties back to Fight Club somehow.
I'm sure it does.
It was Palahniuk's seminal novel.
I was mostly referring to semen, but...
We're going to track down Galvin P. Chow and invite him to be a guest.
Yes, on we got to recruit show. This. We got to recruit this man.
Does that mean I have to, like, go back and read Calvin and Hobbes books?
What do you yes. have to, Kevin?
It's a privilege.
You should be
honored. I get the feeling I skipped over some of the stuff for a reason. I was kind of a more of a Far Side kind of guy.
It was Calvin and Hobbes and the Far Side that made me want to be a cartoonist.
I have every single Calvin and Hobbes book, but...
Well, looks like I have work to do. Thanks, guys.
You have 24 hours.
I can loan you all the Calvin and Hobbes books, Kevin, except you'll have to accept the fact that my daughter believed that all the black and white comics were coloring books. So
it's a Lily interpretation of the coloring that should have been in Calvin and Hobbes. Is that what I'm getting out of this?
I think I'm going to just go into Bardsville.com and just buy them again one at a time. I want to do that. I wouldn't mind owning all of them.
They have the whole run in two massive volumes, man.
Oh, sweet. Oh, I'm totally going to get that.
It's weird. I'm going to start thinking about other comic strips and movies and see if anything else. Like, I'm getting no sleep tonight.
That's what's going to happen, too. Like, I'm going to try to sleep, and all I'm going to be doing is, how can I connect this dot to that dot?
Well, I mean, the human race in the movie WALL-E does bear a striking resemblance to Gary Larson's characters in The Far Side.
I will give you a shiny buffalo nickel if you could somehow link Garfield and Schindler's List.
Garfield to Schindler's List, huh?
Well, okay, he was always trying to send Nermal away, often by train.
He loved lasagna, which is cooked in an oven.
That's a little too far.
It was a like Zhao offensive humor, jeez.
I will never eat lasagna again.
Those poor people.
You have turned lasagna from a delicious Italian food to something anti-Semitic.
Congratulations.
That's Chowski's gift.
Achievement unlocked.
Yeah.
I plan to make pork lasagna, and now there's no way.
Chowski, all you should be just hoping is, you should just be like, I hope I can review in hell. That's what you should be praying for.
In fact, you can review in hell because Michael Bay movies show on a continuous loop in hell.
Oh, good. Yeah, enjoy that. Enjoy that while you're there.
You can have Pearl Harbor on loop.
Just the scenes with Ben Affleck in it.
it's letterbox in hell. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. I think we've covered some very bizarre terrain tonight. By this time next week, I should have a viable connection between Garfield and Schindler's List.
You better.
Do we have any topics on slate for next week?
Besides Garfield and Schindler's List?
What was I jokingly saying I was going to talk about earlier?
Robin Hood, Thief of Wives?
Oh, yes. I actually... This may be a topic we bring up next week.
Okay, then next week we will be discussing the dichotomy between Robin Hood and Big Love. I would love to talk about that. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. Definitely check out the site, geekjuicemedia.com. To see all this wonderful stuff in print form.
And video.
And video, of course.
And comics.
Cartoons.
Whatever you fancy. Alright, I gotta finish eating dinner and take a dump.
I have no secrets.
Yeah, surprise world, I poop.
The supermarket, watching people cut in line. I started thinking about human nature. What would you do if there was no more food? My mind began to wander about greed and hunger, and just how many of the countries are getting ready for another war. But the sun was shining and everything. Chemical bomb, chemical bomb. Eyes melt, skin explodes, everybody dead. It won't be long, it won't be long. People gonna run around losing their heads. A river of blood, who's gonna live? The earth is tired of humankind, and I think this world